Labudu. We're live this morning from the brink of Springfield Center in downtown Springfield. In less than an hour, J.B. Pritzker will take the oath of office to become our 43rd governor. I'm here with IPR Statehouse reporter Brian Mackey for this hour or two of special coverage. Brian, good morning.
Good morning, Nyla.
And we've just gotten the welcome from the official podium, as folks can hear. This program officially started about half an hour ago, but it sounds like they're asking people to take their seats. Can you walk us through what we're going to hear for the next hour or so?
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of pomp and circumstance, as the song would have it,
pageantry. And as you can probably hear in the background.
Yeah, as we're sitting sort of in the back of this cavernous convention center basketball arena. There's a National Guard, both Army and Air National Guard, Color Guard lined up here to present the colors.
Yeah, they're right next to us, actually, and they'll be presenting the colors and the flag. And before, we're about an hour from when J.B. Pritzker will actually take the oath of office. Constitutionally, that's supposed to happen at 12:01.
Yeah, I actually couldn't find that in the Constitution, even
that's
though people have been saying that.
Saying
but
this
I know, but that it's the plan of the day calls for that to happen at 12:01. It may be statute, I don't know. But we're listening to the Air National Guard Band of the Midwest now, the 566th Air Force Band and the 144th Army National Guard Band.
And we've got lots of bands and processionals. We've got several invocations that we will be hearing, musical performances before we get to the oath of office, not just for Governor Pritzker, but for the Lieutenant Governor, the Attorney General, Secretary of State, Comptroller, and Treasurer. So we will be bringing that to you. Before we get to that this hour, we are going to be talking a little bit about this new term of office. Brian, let's just start, first of all, with the atmosphere. We're going to play in a few minutes an interview you and I had a chance to do with Representative Greg Harris, the incoming leader, but he talked about optimism, and certainly that seems to be a lot of the mood today.
Yeah, and I think any time you have a change of party in the top executive office, in the governor's office, you have that person's party pretty optimistic. So 4 years ago, there was a mood of optimism. It just happened to be among Republicans at that time. This time, it's among Democrats, and there happen to be more Democrats in Illinois. They've gained not only the governor's mansion and swept all the other constitutional offices, but they also have supermajorities in the Illinois House and the Illinois Senate. And so there's a lot of optimism about enacting legislation that the Democrats have wanted to see enacted for a long time in Illinois, raising the minimum wage, making health care more universally accessible to people, and legalizing cannabis are among the issues that we expect Governor Pritzker to pursue.
And we also, of course, expect and hope to see some fixes to our deep fiscal problems. We're going to be talking about all of these issues this hour. Brian, first I wanted to ask you, you had a chance to sit down with soon to be no longer governor-elect Pritzker. You sat down with him yesterday and had a chance to have some pretty deep policy conversations with him about where he wants to go. Can you give us some highlights from that interview?
Yeah, I wanted to. So we've heard a lot of questions to him about, you know, how are you going to work with Speaker Madigan and sort of the big picture things. And I was really trying to just drill down into some of the details and the nitty gritty of policy. An area of interest of mine is criminal justice. Governor Rauner made it a centerpiece of his administration to lower the prison population gradually, and turns out that was actually quite a successful effort, although there are a lot of other factors at play beyond just the sort of reform commission that he had put forth policies. So I was asking Pritzker, for example, about there's this idea in criminal justice reform that if you want to really reduce the prison population, you can't just talk about, well, low-level drug offenders. That's the thing that everybody agrees on. That's the kind of easy thing. So I said, are you willing to take
on a bipartisan basis?
On a bipartisan basis, even, yes. But if you really want to address mass incarceration, as Pritzker's campaign platform said he did, there are experts who say you have to go beyond the nons, right? The non-serious, non-violent, non-sexual offenders. And those are obviously, from a political standpoint, more difficult because you don't want to be perhaps seen as painted as soft on crime. But if you really want to change the culture of incarceration, this era of mass incarceration that some people, including soon-to-be Governor Pritzker, say we're in, you have to go beyond the nons. And he was a little more cautious, I would say, on that, and you know, wanted to talk about his efforts to legalize cannabis, and not just legalize cannabis, but also potentially go backwards and pardon people who have been convicted for these crimes in the past. But we can talk more about that later in the broadcast.
I'm Nyla Boodoo. I'm here with Brian Mackey. You're listening to special coverage from Illinois Public Radio of the inauguration of Governor Pritzker, who will, within an hour, become our 43rd governor for the state of Illinois. We've got a couple of other reporters who are here with us as well. I want to welcome IPR reporters Daisy Contreras and Jacqueline Driscoll, who have also been with us throughout the morning. Jacqueline, you have had a chance. We've all been here all morning and talking to different folks who've been gathering. Who are some of the people you've talked to? What have they told you this morning?
Daisy, first off, you have to excuse me. I'm a little under the weather, but I'm returning to health, so I apologize if I'm a little bit hard to understand. But we first spoke with Representative Sue Scheer. We also spoke with Representative Tim Butler. I want to hit on Tim Butler first because he is a Republican. He obviously had the, bipartisan spirit, and we're excited. This is a good day for Illinois, but he did also mention this isn't the way that he wanted things to go. He is a little fearful of negotiations on certain things in the future. He spoke specifically about minimum wage. This is something that he's concerned about from a small business perspective, which we heard from Governor Bruce Rauner. Sue Scheer, she was really excited. She's a Democrat, so it's a good day. It's a turning point for Illinois, and she's looking forward to it.
Jacqueline, you mentioned minimum wage. Daisy, you've been covering that issue, how important that will be for Governor Pritzker when he takes office. Do you think within the first 100 days we may see some action on minimum wage?
It's a possibility, yeah, definitely. From speaking to other lawmakers who have supported this in the past, they say that, this is at the top of their list. Pritzker has said that one of his main issues is also doing minimum wage increase. In the past, Governor Rauner, like Jacqueline said earlier, it's an issue for small businesses and small business owners on how they are going to be able to afford doing a minimum wage increase. So I think there's going to be a lot of talk within lawmakers to see if they can get bipartisan support on this. But do they really need it? I don't know.
Yeah, that's the question, right? Because they have super majorities in both the House and Senate. But there's going to be a lot of pressure from the Retail Merchants Association, the Chamber of Commerce, and all these other business interests pushing back and saying that our members cannot afford this.
Right. Daisy and I actually were looking just before this, looking at other states surrounding Illinois, and Illinois is one of the higher ones, comparing to Iowa, Indiana. I think Missouri was just a little bit more than our minimum wage, $8.25. I think they were $8.60. So, but again, Illinois is kind of this progressive haven in the Midwest. So,
and it's so different if you're talking about Southern Illinois, which is both in culture and economy and geographically closer to places like Missouri and Kentucky, and you're talking about the Chicago area, which is much more like Los Angeles or New York or some of the other very high cost of living big cities, where a higher minimum wage would be, how do I put this? You need more money to get by because of the cost of living.
Higher cost of living.
Higher cost of living.
There we go.
I would also say this idea, and you hear this a lot, that what are you going to accomplish in your first 100 days? I mean, I think that goes back to the Franklin Roosevelt administration, right? That was kind of his marker, see what we can do.
We should really do the first year.
Well, that's it. It's the first 6 months, because the legislative calendar since the 1960s has been very fixed, and it's very rare that bills do not follow the sort of ordinary course that has them passing at the end of May, if they're going to pass.
And Pritzker's office did say that the first 100 days will be a focus on working families and just trying to tackle his campaign promises, and one of those was raising the minimum wage.
Right. So earlier, Brian, you and I had a chance to talk to Greg Harris. Before we play that conversation, do you want to explain a little bit more about Representative Harris's new role?
Yeah, if I can even be a little nerdier than that and step back and say the Illinois House of Representatives, which is run with the majority party as Democrats, you have the Speaker of the House, Mike Madigan. Everybody knows him. But then the number two Democrat to that position has the title of Majority Leader. This has been the same person since the late 1990s, a state representative named Barbara Flynn Curry. She represents Chicago. She was a liberal icon. It was controversial when she accepted this role.
She was the first woman.
She was the first woman, and it was controversial when she accepted the role because a lot of liberals felt she was sort of selling them out to go with the machine politician of Speaker Madigan. But she held that role, and then last year she announced she had a long career and she was going to retire from the legislature. And so there was a lot of speculation. Who will it be? Who is Madigan going to pick to be his number two in the Illinois House, and he chose State Representative Greg Harris, who I think, as we'll hear in the tape, is a first. So if Representative Curry was the first woman, Harris is his own first in this position.
Right. Let's hear and listen to that interview that Brian and I had with Representative Harris just about an hour ago.
I want to ask you, there's a lot of talk this year about progressive Democrats versus, you know, your more traditional Illinois Democrats. And Illinois Democrats have a big tent, I've often said. I mean, that's why, you know, they have such big majorities in Illinois. How are you going to balance the sort of rising progressive impulse in the Democratic Party against the needs of, you know, maintaining that big tent majority that allows people to vote against gun legislation, against taxes, things like that?
Well, I think the really good thing there this year is that across the state, people decided voting for Democrats was the right thing to do, and we have more new Democrats elected to the House this year than any time in recent memory. But, you know, every person is not the same. They all come from different districts. They come from different parts of the state. They come with different concerns. So, yeah, when you have, you know, a huge number of members, being sure that every viewpoint is heard and that, you know, every region of the state's needs are taken care of, it is a big challenge. But that's a good thing. So it means there's a lot of voices, there will be a lot of debate. You know, there are some members who are, you know, more to the moderate side than others, some members who are more, you know, liberal than others. You've got Chicago, suburban, central Illinois, you know, southern, a lot of different things to balance.
Would you say the balance would happen between the Democratic Party in Chicago and downstate as well, as we think about that?
Well, that's why we come here. That's why 118 people come to Springfield every week, and we stay here together, and we sit in rooms together, and we work through issues together and come to compromises. And there are fights along the way, you know, because there's clearly going to be some disagreements. But at the end of the day, you know, we get stuff done, and when we're working in a bipartisan way. And simply the fact that this year we have a governor who's going to be looking to accomplish things and pushing us all to come to an agreement and get things passed, I mean, that's going to be such a breath of fresh air after the last 4 years.
Speaking of the last 4 years, and even before that, just the mood in the Capitol. You've been here since December 2006, I believe. You know, from the tail end of the Blagojevich administration, through the Great Recession, through the budget impasse under Governor Rauner, it has just been a kind of a not the most upbeat place to work. As a Democrat coming into supermajorities with a Democratic governor, how does this feel to you personally being a legislator at this time?
Oh, I'll tell you, the mood is so different. Simply the fact you have both the Democratic leaders and both the Republican leaders out publicly talking about working together, and we haven't seen this in years. That's important. But just, I mean, here, I'm just looking around this Coliseum, and we're on the radio and not on TV, so we're in this giant Coliseum, thousands of seats, people from every walk of life, from every corner of the state, thronging in here, filling the place up, because I think, you know, everywhere I've gone, like in my district and, you know, places that I go, people are just really happy that maybe they finally see some brightness and some light, and government saying, oh, heck, we're going to work together to get stuff done, and we're going to put aside the fighting and the bickering and the wars.
In the historic nature, I'm just curious if you want to comment on that, just of your leadership and your position, but also when we're looking at folks that are holding statewide office. We're thinking of the first African-American attorney general as well. I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Well, and I couldn't be happier about that. So think of it this way. Yeah, Illinois is 200 years old. So it took us 200 years to get a African-American attorney general. My predecessor, the great Barbara Flynn Curry, it took about 150 some years for the first woman majority leader, and I guess that would make me the first openly gay majority leader of the House of Representatives.
That was Representative Greg Harris. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Brian Mackey and I had a chance to speak with him earlier. You were listening to special coverage from Illinois Public Radio. We are live from the Bank of Springfield Center. And we've got lots of people here. They're gathering different videos that are playing to talk about welcoming the governor and other folks. Brian, as we were listening to Representative Harris there talking about the historic nature of this legislature, but also the things he wants to accomplish, how likely, I wonder if we can just run down a couple of issues here. One, I'm thinking about things like education, something Governor Rauner certainly, upon his departure, touted as something he did in his term of office. And I'm thinking about education funding, him signing that historic school funding reform. Education is always an issue that people want to focus on. Where are we likely to see Governor Pritzker take some action on that front?
Well, he has been active in his personal life as a billionaire philanthropist in early childhood education. And he has talked about expanding 3- and 4-year-olds in preschool in Illinois by about 12,500 children a year for 8 years. And talking about a big increase. It's basically 100,000 more kids over the better part of the next decade.
Wow.
Enrolled in preschool.
Mm-hmm.
He has also talked about lowering the mandatory school enrollment age from 6 down to 5. And so he has, I think people are waiting to see in terms of education funding. That's where a lot of the conversation has been. There was a big bill passed just last, or 2 years ago now. And we are seeing that the Michael Frerichs is stepping to the podium now. I don't know if we want to
take a listen to what he has to say.
Treasurer Michael Frerichs, and he's with his daughter approaching,
yes,
or being introduced on stage, I guess. This is not stepping to the podium, they're taking their seats.
So it looks like they are now beginning to introduce all of the different folks who are going to be holding statewide office slates.
The main players, yes, the mayor.
Susana Mendoza, who of course just announced her run for mayor of Chicago. So she is going to be taking the oath of office today. Her second term as controller, but is also going to be running for Chicago. Lots of folks in Chicago are going to be very interested to what she has to say today.
Yeah, it did take some of the wind out of the sails of the governor's race in terms of the Chicago media coverage when the Rahm Emanuel announced he would not be seeking re-election.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Illinois Secretary of State Jesse White and his family.
Jesse White is the longest-serving Secretary of State in Illinois history. He was the first African-American to hold this position. Jacqueline, you're nodding. He's been in office, is it, since 1999? Am I correct on that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the Attorney General-elect of the state of Illinois, Kwame Raoul.
Kwame Raoul now taking the stage with his family. He's just newly engaged, if I'm correct. I don't think they've gotten married yet.
No, we just confirmed that, actually, with Jordan Abadea, the press secretary.
And he is, of course, has been the state senator since the mid-aughts, and he took over from Barack Obama when Barack Obama was in the U.S. Senate.
Please welcome Ryan Eccles, Cassidy Stratton, Tyler Stratton, Ryan Stratton, and the Lieutenant Governor-elect of the state of Illinois, Juliana Stratton.
And this is, as
big
you just heard, the Lieutenant
from
Governor.
Chicago, from lots of people are standing now. We've already had a session of standing ovation for Juliana Stratton, who is coming to the stage now with her family. Lots of folks are cheering for Juliana Stratton, Lieutenant Governor, and we very interesting the role that she's going to be taking as well, and I imagine everyone's waiting now for Governor-elect J.B. Pritzker to be announced and come on stage. While we're waiting for that,
please welcome Donnie Pritzker, Teddy Pritzker, M.K. Pritzker, and the Governor-elect of the state of Illinois, J.B. Pritzker.
And a standing ovation for J.B. Pritzker and his family. The entire Coliseum is on its feet.
Ladies and gentlemen, to swear the oath of
Office of Governor. Please welcome Governor-elect J.B. Pritzker, accompanied by Donnie Pritzker, Teddy Pritzker, and M.K. Pritzker. The oath will be administered by the Honorable James E. Snyder.
Place your right hand and repeat after me. I state your name.
I, J.B. Pritzker.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Illinois.
And the Constitution of the State of Illinois.
And that I will faithfully exercise.
And that I will faithfully exercise.
The duties of Office of Governor of Illinois.
The duties of Officer of Governor of Illinois.
According to the best of my ability.
According to the best of my ability.
Congratulations, Governor.
Thank you.
Governor of Illinois is J.B. Pritzker. The audience here is on their feet, applauding a standing ovation for J.B. Pritzker. We now expect that he will be addressing the crowd.
He will be delivering his inaugural address after, I'm sure, taking a few moments to soak up this applause with his wife, M.K., and their two children on stage.
Thank you all very much. Thank you. I want to begin today by thanking my family. First, my partner, my best friend, the love of my life, and now the First Lady of Illinois, M.K. Pritzker. My wonderful children, Teddy and Donnie, I love you more than life itself. And my parents, Sue and Don Pritzker, who departed this world too soon, more than three decades ago, but who left behind a set of values around honor and decency that will endure as long as there are good people in the world. And please join me in giving an ovation for my partner and your Lieutenant Governor, the incomparable Juliana Stratton. I want to acknowledge the other distinguished guests here today, Chief Justice Lloyd Carmire, President John Cullerton, Speaker Michael Madigan, Leader Bill Brady, Leader Jim Durkin, Attorney General-elect Kwame Raoul, Secretary of State Jesse White, Comptroller Susana Mendoza, Treasurer Mike Frericks, members of the General Assembly, members of the Congressional Delegation, Governor Pat Quinn, Governor Bruce Rauner, and National Guard Adjutant General Richard Hayes. To all of you, on behalf of the people of Illinois, I thank you for your service. Ladies and gentlemen, for 200 years, Illinois has proudly stood as the beating heart of our republic, a place whose people have high hope and clear vision. This is where Lincoln found the mettle to grip a warring nation in both hands and hold us together. This is where Obama came to organize and to witness the courage that runs deep in our communities, in whom he found the fortitude to launch his bid to make history. This is where the 13th and 19th Amendments to the U.S. Constitution were first ratified, ending slavery and guaranteeing a woman's right to vote. This is where, on the Sunday morning after the Great Chicago Fire, Reverend Robert Collier, pastor of the First Unitarian Church, an immigrant, an ardent anti-slavery abolitionist, and a women's suffrage advocate, stood amidst the broken ruins of his once grand church and brought hope and vision to his devastated congregation. His parishioners gathered around him, the sun peeking through gutted walls and splintered beams, an overturned column serving as his pulpit. His words that morning have survived the 148 years since. A testament to their power and truth. What is lost, he asked? First, our homes. Second, our businesses. But these are temporary. What we have not lost is our geography. Nature called the lakes, the forests, the prairies together in convention long before we were born. And they decided that on this spot, a great city would be built. We have not lost hope. The fire makes no difference to me. If you'll stay here, I will. And we'll work together and help each other out of our troubles. Since Reverend Collier's time, Americans have often had to gather in broken cathedrals, some of stone and glass, some of aspirations and promises, to reaffirm our faith to one another. We find ourselves at such a moment now. We contend every day with an economy that gives too little and takes too much, that allows passion and work ethic to be overwhelmed by student loans, unexpected health emergencies, and the rising cost of living. We want strong families, but we have yet to embrace more robust policies supporting paid parental leave and affordable childcare that will sustain them. We watch 100-year storms that now come every year, and yet we don't allow the science of climate change to guide our decision-making. We fail to hold accountable leaders who sacrifice truth for personal gain, who substitute pageantry for patriotism. We're a nation founded on fearless ideas, and yet we move away from those drawn to that vision. We want better roads, better wages, better schools, but we vilify anyone who dares suggest a workable path to those things. We allow schools and movie theaters and hospitals and neighborhoods to become battlefields, legally accessible by the weapons of war. Our abdication of responsibility must end. Just a few weeks ago, I went to Mercy Hospital to attend a vigil honoring the victims of the murderous shootings there, to honor the police officer who ran into gunfire and not away from it, to honor the University of Illinois doctor who raised money for disadvantaged kids and led her church choir, to honor a pharmacist who went into medicine because she had struggled with health problems herself. These are the very best of Illinois. As a public servant, it's hard to bear witness to violence such as this. But this job also exposes you to people who stitch us together time and again, to the Illinoisans who remind us what amazing capacity we have to change. At the Mercy Hospital vigil, Sister Barbara Centener read a Franciscan prayer that speaks to who we are in Illinois. She said, "May God bless us with tears to shed for those who suffer from pain, rejection, hunger, and war, so that we may reach out our hands to comfort them and turn their pain into joy. And may God bless us with enough foolishness to believe that we can make a difference in this world, so that we can do what others claim cannot be done, to bring justice and kindness to all our children and the poor." At 200 years old, Illinois is still a young promise. Our time here has been but a blink. In 2019, we must begin a new century with a new maturity and enough foolishness to believe that we can make a difference in this world. That starts with leadership that abandons single-minded, arrogant notions. No, everything is not broken. Our history is a story of leaps forward and occasional stumbles backward, and a promise renewed with each generation that we will try harder, that we will do better, that big breakthroughs are built of centuries of selfless effort by unheralded heroes, that big change rides on what we can do together, not on what one person attempts alone. Neighbors working side by side in Taylorville lost their homes and worldly possessions in the recent tornadoes. They know that what Reverend Collier said right after the Great Chicago Fire was right. We work together to help each other out of our troubles. So today, with all the challenges Illinois faces, Democrats and Republicans will work together, and we must begin with our most basic responsibilities. We will propose, debate, and pass a balanced budget this year. It won't be easy, but let's confront this challenge with honesty. Our obligations as a state outmatch our resources. Our fiscal situation right now is challenging. And the solution requires a collective commitment to embracing hard choices. We need to bring efficiencies to state government. Our information technology systems are outdated, and they cost more to maintain than they do to replace. Inexpensive healthcare prevention programs were decimated, causing higher spending to treat diseases that could have been cured. Balancing the budget means lowering the cost of government while delivering the high-quality services that Illinoisans deserve. But be clear about this. I won't balance the budget on the backs of the starving, the sick, and the suffering. And I won't hollow out the functions of government to achieve an ideological agenda. I won't make government the enemy and government employees the scapegoats. Responsible fiscal management is a marriage of numbers and values, which is why it's time to start the earnest work of creating a fair tax system here in Illinois. Our regressive tax system, including property taxes and sales taxes, currently has the middle class paying nearly double the rate that the wealthy pay. That's not fair. And it doesn't pay our bills. Today, our state's fiscal instability affects every single person who lives and works in Illinois, whether you earn millions or the minimum wage. It means that our government wastes tens of millions of dollars paying higher interest rates than almost any other state. And we scare businesses and families away because they fear our uncertain future. The current tax system is simply unsustainable. Others have lied to you about this fact. I won't. The future of Illinois depends on the passage of a fair income tax, which will bring us into the 21st century like most of our Midwestern neighbors and like the vast majority of the United States. Now, I'm not naive about what it will take to do this. All who enter a discussion about our state's budget and a fair tax system in good faith will be welcome to the table. But if you lead with partisanship and scare tactics, you will be met with considerable political will. It's time to update and repair our state's aging infrastructure. Railways, roads, bridges, and freshwater arteries are on the verge of collapse. Crumbling bridges mean people's lives are in danger. Deteriorating rail systems means goods and services take longer to deliver and they cost more. We are the nation's supply chain hub, and we must be built like it. Let's remember, too, that an aging highway system is not just concrete and steel. It's a longer commute home. It's missing those golden hours between dinner and bedtime when your kids are young, where you spend a few minutes reading a book together and talking about their day. The seemingly dry acts of government really do affect the richness and joy of our lives. We must treat the decisions we make together, the decisions of our elected officials to champion a cause, and the decisions of our citizens to embrace or reject those efforts with an eye to the pursuit of happiness. As we enter Illinois' third century, we must bring a renaissance to downstate Illinois, which has been deprived of some basic resources for education and business building that are taken for granted elsewhere in our state. To begin with, we will work to deliver high-speed broadband internet coverage to everyone in every corner of Illinois. Today, every new job and every student is dependent upon connectivity, and no part of our state should be left out. Now, our future depends upon our actions today, and that's why we must embrace a broad vision of environmental protection, or else decisions are going to be forced upon us in ways that will offer us little control and catastrophic outcomes for our children. I believe in science, and to that end, as one of my first acts as governor, Illinois will become a member of the U.S. Climate Alliance, upholding the goals and ideals of the Paris Climate Accord. Working men and women deserve to have a governor and a Department of Labor that will enforce laws protecting workers' wages and workers' rights. And they deserve a $15 minimum wage. It's good for the working families of Illinois and good for our economy. As your governor, I will be committed to helping us become the fastest growing big state economy in the nation. I'll be our state's best chief marketing officer to attract jobs and businesses to Illinois. We'll bring capital and technical assistance and mentorship to help Illinoisans across our state to start and build new businesses and new jobs. Our economic success depends upon that. In the interest of keeping the public safe from harm, and in the interest of expanding true justice in our criminal justice system and advancing economic inclusion, I will work with the legislature to legalize, tax, and regulate the sale of recreational cannabis in Illinois. We will approach education with a holistic mindset, recognizing that students do their best in community schools where teachers are paid well. And where kids start learning at the earliest ages. And our economy grows when vocational training, when community colleges and universities are strong. And we will do all of this with the most diverse set of voices and perspectives that Illinois has ever seen. I have built a cabinet of people who will bring with them experiences that I don't share, from communities I did not come from, with expertise I don't have, because to lead well, all of Illinois must be represented in the decision making. And furthermore, I want all of the children of Illinois to see someone who looks like them in our government. High hope and clear vision are what have built this state. Despite all the turmoil in this world, Illinoisans continue to build, innovate, create, and dream. Our agriculture sector is built on the most fertile soil in the world, and it's expanding, employing more than 700,000 people in every part of this state. We have nearly 13,000 manufacturing firms in Illinois that employ more than 580,000 people, most of them proud union workers with the best training in the world. One out of 10 computer science degrees in the nation comes from Illinois' colleges and universities. Our entrepreneurs continue to be tireless dreamers. Whether it's Jamie Gladfelter creating a software development incubator in Galesburg, Jeremy Draper shaping glass in Peoria, Lena Kim creating custom jewelry in Evanston, or Leif Anderson still using his grandfather's original recipes to make and sell candy in Richmond. That's the Illinois that I see, one of possibility and promise. That's the Illinois that I know, one whose people are fearless and audacious. And that's the vision I have for this state, another century of boundless opportunity. When your faith in this future flags, I urge you to remember Reverend Collier and his ruined church, how he was the vessel for his parishioners' burnt hopes, how he saw the natural beauty of Illinois and knew that nothing could steal that from them. I see the natural beauty of Illinois in our people. More than anything else, I see it in our capacity to be kind. Consider the story a few weeks ago of Casey Handel and Zadette Rosado. Casey and Zadette moved to Barrington last May, and they proudly flew a rainbow flag behind their home. And then someone snuck into their backyard and stole it, replacing it with an American flag. Ironic, because the thief doesn't understand that you rob the American flag of meaning when you steal a person's symbol of self-expression. Now, that could have been the end of that story, but Casey and Zadette's neighbor Kim Fillion wouldn't let it be. She put a pride flag in her yard in solidarity, and then she kept buying them because her neighbors kept asking for them too. Soon there were pride flags everywhere. A place that hate had tried to fill was conquered by love instead. And Kim Fillion noted, frankly, I've grown weary of this, of all this hate. And I gotta say, it just seemed like there was one thing that I could do that I had control of. Remember that our ability to grow weary of hate fuels our enormous capacity to be kind. The bright moments of our past, the north stars of our future, are all lit not by ambition, partisanship, or greed, but by kindness. A willingness to be kind is a virtue often overlooked in life. A commitment to be kind in politics can change the world. Over a century ago, public policy grounded by kindness offered a penniless immigrant to Illinois a bed to sleep in, a public school education, and the opportunity to succeed. And 130 years later, his great-grandson just took the oath of office to become governor of this great state. So thank you, Illinois. Thank you for your faith in me. I promise to live up to it every day. Together, let's go into this new century with enough faith to help each other out of our troubles, with enough foolishness to believe that we can make a difference in this world, and with enough kindness to find the courage to change. Thank you. God bless the state of Illinois, and God bless the United States of America.
Listening to special coverage from Illinois Public Radio of J.B. Pritzker's inauguration ceremonies. He has now been sworn in and addressed the audience here, as well as those listening all across the state. I'm Nyla Boodoo here with Brian Mackey as we listen to really J.B. Pritzker painting a very different vision of what he wants out of the next 4 years.
Yeah, and not really holding back, going right after former Governor Rauner,
who, as you noted, was sitting right
behind
him.
Front row looking on, but saying, let's be clear about this. I won't balance the budget on the back. effects of the starving, the sick, and the suffering. So really, and also outlining his vision for a progressive income tax in Illinois, legalizing cannabis, and a number of his other policy ideas. And if we want to go here to listen to the administering of the oath to Julianne Stratton, we'll keep talking.
Yeah, let's take a listen in just a minute. But just to note, those really painting a picture of what he wants in Illinois, including something that might make a headline, that he wants Illinois to join the Paris Climate Accords.
Yeah, it's not, I guess, surprising from a Democrat, but we have seen other states stepping up where the federal government has not.
Here's Julianne Stratton.
Please raise your right hand and place your left hand on the Bible and repeat after me. I state your name.
Julianne Stratton. Do solemnly affirm
that I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Illinois.
And the Constitution of the State of Illinois.
And that I will faithfully discharge the duties of the office of.
Discharge the duties of the office of
Lieutenant Governor,
according to the best of my ability.
Congratulations, Madam Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you.
And Julianne Stratton now has been sworn in as Lieutenant Governor of Illinois. I imagine we don't often hear from the Lieutenant Governor, but certainly she played a very prominent role in the campaign and already started a few task forces. We're going to hear from now, I imagine, from her what she would like to accomplish over the next 4 years.
Thank you all. As I stand on this stage before you, I cannot start my remarks without first pausing to give honor to an awesome God. A God who has kept me and protected me and sustained me every step of the way, who has called me to the work that I do and has given me a passion for public service. I am humbled and eternally grateful to stand where I do today, and I feel incredibly blessed to be of service to all of you. Congratulations to all of my fellow constitutional officers being sworn in today. To Judge Adrian Davis, thank you for administering the oath of office. To Evangelist Jonjina Dinsmore, thank you for speaking a blessing over me this morning at the prayer service. To my love, Brian, thank you for your steadfast support and for taking my hand every single day and praying over me. I am so proud of the man that you are and to have you by my side. And without a doubt, you have made this journey so much easier, and I love you. To my remarkable daughters, Tyler, Cassidy, Ryan, and Mackenzie, I stand in awe of your inner and outer beauty and the many ways that you are able to authentically express unwavering love and support. I know the sacrifices you also have made for me to be here today, and I appreciate you and I love you all so much. And I've been waiting to say this. To Governor J.B. Pritzker, I am so honored to serve as your partner as you lead the great state of Illinois, and I am grateful for your vision to lift up every community and serve every resident of our state. And I can't think of anyone else that I'd want in your place as we get ready to roll up our sleeves and get to work. And to know that MK will be at your side as our fantastic First Lady. And Teddy and Donnie to round out our first family only makes this journey even sweeter. And to all of you who are gathered here today for this momentous occasion, elected officials and other colleagues, family, friends, my special group of sister friends, to my Jack and Jill and Link sisters, to the illustrious women of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, Incorporated, and to so many that I have met along the way, even those who are supporters as well as those who might have hoped for a different outcome, to all of you, I look forward to working with you, listening to your perspectives and partnering with you to better the lives of all Illinoisans. I stand here today on the shoulders of my ancestors whose blood runs through my veins and who understood the principles of collective responsibility in community building. See, before she died in 1983, my maternal grandmother, Velma Slaughter, wrote out the family history for her grandchildren, and it has meant so much to me that it was inserted in the Bible upon which I laid my hand a few moments ago. My grandmother wanted me and all of her grandchildren to know that we come from a line of people who are community builders from the ground up. That my ancestors were never solely concerned with just their own lineage, but were committed to building a community where their neighbors and those across the street and around the corner and across town could also succeed. For over 35 years, I've read my grandmother's words and longed to know what life was really like for my great-great-grandfather, William Stevens, and his twin brother, Daniel, who were born into slavery and whose story she told. And sometime after President Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation and my ancestors were set free, the Stevens brothers were given a large plot of land in Mississippi by the man that once owned them. William and Daniel Stevens married two sisters, one being my great-great-grandmother Margaret, and they continued to purchase adjoining land and rented it out to tenants. These brothers, formerly enslaved, were industrious and continued to build this community. They farmed the land, growing cotton, vegetables, and fruit, and tended to livestock and poultry. And they helped to create every institution that was needed for their tenants to live full lives. A church, a school, a general store, a post office. These two brothers, my ancestors, understood the value of community and recognized that in lifting up others, it creates a legacy of opportunity for generations to come. This past summer, I took a short journey to Stevensville, Mississippi, where the land was given and named after my great-great-grandfather and his brother, with an aching desire to walk upon the soil of those that came before me and whose legacy I seek to honor every day of my life. The trip had spiritual implications, as I wanted to reconnect with my roots in the rural experience at a time that I was traveling the rural areas of our state and meeting so many people and listening to the stories of those whose lives were so very different than mine on the south side of Chicago. I discovered the schoolhouse that my ancestors helped build. And I immediately connected to why we are fighting to ensure that every child has access to quality education, starting at the earliest years and all the way through what should be affordable and accessible opportunities in vocational and higher education. I discovered the church that my ancestors helped found. And I'm immediately connected to why we prioritize rebuilding and strengthening human services in our state, understanding that we must be compassionate towards those in need and demonstrate benevolence to the most vulnerable in our state. And I discovered the Stevensville Market, a small store that had all of the essentials and seemingly the only business in town, and I immediately connected to why entrepreneurship and economic opportunity and inclusion must be guiding values for strengthening our state's often forgotten communities and thereby strengthening all of Illinois. My trip to Stevensville, Mississippi, was powerful, and it centered me for the work that lies ahead. See, I had to reach back to my past to better understand my future, to be reminded that community building is not done principally through policymaking or legislation or proclamations. Community building is done when we refuse to let our narrow self-interest be the sole guiding force, and instead put them on hold long enough to listen to someone who has an opposing idea, to break bread with someone whose circumstances seem vastly different than our own, and to commit to working side by side, even when it's hard, to make life better, not just for our own, but for those around us, and mostly for generations that follow us. On December 3rd, 1818, Illinois became the 21st state. 200 years later, with the DNA of my formerly enslaved great-great-grandfather, William Stevens, as part of my genetic makeup, I am proud to stand before you as our state's first Black lieutenant governor. The historic nature of my inauguration is not lost on me. It is also not lost on me that in 2019, having just celebrated our state's bicentennial and entering our third century, that we are still a nation and a state of first. That there are still doors of opportunity that have been closed for far too many for far too long, and that there are still too many spaces in our democracy where what was meant to be a representative government simply fails to be a representation of us all. We have to change that. And while progress is being made, albeit too slowly, it is abundantly clear that we will never realize our full potential if we fail to embrace our interconnectedness and broaden our sense of community. I cannot be my best self if I am not working for you to be your best self. We simply cannot be our best selves as Illinoisans if we don't proactively and intentionally seek ways to listen to one another, to problem solve together and highlight our commonalities more than we seek out our differences. As Illinoisans, though we number nearly 13 million, in many ways, we are, in fact, one community. And while this statewide community includes urban and suburban and rural, while it encompasses tech firms and manufacturing, small businesses, nonprofits, and family farms, while it's made up of different backgrounds and ages, faiths, and political affiliations, races, nationalities, and ethnicities, gender identities, and physical abilities, this is our community. We belong here. We must look out for each other. And we must work to build our community together. Illinois, in the spirit of my ancestors, William and Margaret Stevens, Henry and Janie Wiggins, Wilbur and Velma Slaughter, and my parents and those who have parented me, Henry and VK, Martin and Gwendolyn, Lindbergh and Sammy, I am honored to serve as your Lieutenant Governor, and I am more committed than ever before to working on your behalf, fighting for what's right, putting the people of Illinois first, ensuring an inclusive and representative government, and working alongside of all of you to make our community, this Illinois community, the very best that it can be. Thank you. May God bless each and every one of you. May God bless the state of Illinois, and may God bless the United States of America.